It's the unknown. Unknown. It's the unknown. Unknown preacher.
What you say, G?
Saved from Aggie Pride.
Don't speak too soon.
I think it's cool, so it's like it's cool. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, we have Fayetteville State in the first segment, so but Jessica says she can hold it down for ANC solo. So we're gonna go going into that. Fair enough. No, they go McKenzie. She got some backup.
Oh man.
You're gonna McKenzie. Need-
Hello.
So you done even the odds because Eagles were trying to tear up on Aggie.
Oh, right? Yes. Thank you.
No.
Yes, I need a backup.
beautiful people, we are back. So as y'all could hear, there's a little rivalry going on right now. But we are in part two and with our panelists, and Reagan is helping me do what she do. Let's get right into it because everyone's time is extremely valuable. Our first panelist representing NCCU, he was, weren't you a legacy student too, Robert?
Yes, I am.
Yeah.
I call it super legacy.
Super legacy. We'll let you explore that, share that with us. He was a legacy student, super legacy student. And he's now the interim chief of police at NCCU, where he obtained his bachelor's degree in science and criminal justice. He is currently pursuing his master's degree at NCCU, a career veteran of law enforcement who serves as the National Diversity Committee chairman of the National Fraternal Order of Police. He served as state vice president of the North Carolina FOP. He is the president of the Durham County FOP Lodge number 2. He also served as the vice president of the Eastern North Carolina chapter of the National Organization of Black Law Enforcement Executives. He's an expert in tactical enforcement, drug interdiction, narcotics, and criminal investigation. Former Durham City Police Captain, again, interim police chief at NCCU. Robert Getty, what's up, brother?
Eagle Pride in the house, amplified, baby. You know how we do.
I see.
That's my man Lonzo in the house.
I appreciate you, brother.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next panelist is Jessica Alexander, who graduated from A&T in 2013 with a bachelor's degree in mass communications. She has a master's in public affairs from UNC Greensboro, and she currently works for the city of Greensboro as a public safety community specialist. Welcome, Jessica. How are you?
I am well. Glad to be here.
Thank you. Thank you so much. We appreciate you. And third panelist, my nephew, Brian, who is repping Norfolk State.
Seriously.
NCCU and Howard, right? Brian Bird. What'd you say, Brian?
I said Big Three.
Yes, indeed. Brian Bird spent his formative years in early education in D.C. and Maryland area. Right after high school, he enrolled at Norfolk State University in Norfolk, Virginia to study mass communications. He later transferred to North Carolina Central University to complete his degree. While at NCCU, Brian started his own media company, Triumphant Visions LLC. Triumphant Visions provides visual storytelling through mediums of photography, videography, and articles. After completing his bachelor's degree, he moved back to the DMV, where he enrolled at Howard University to pursue his MBA, which he completed in May of 2024, proud of your nephew, and remains in the area working to scale his business and inspire the youth, elders, and peers alike. Welcome, nephew.
Good to be here. Thanks for having me, Unc.
Yes, indeed. Our final panelist is Mackenzie Telfair, who is a senior honors kinesiology student at North Carolina A&T University. She's studying kinesiology with a concentration in exercise science, with plans to attend graduate school to obtain her master's of science in athletic training. Please welcome to the Unknown Preacher LA, Mackenzie. How are you?
I'm good. Happy to be here.
Good. Man, I appreciate you. You had me tongue-tied with the kinesiology.
Kinesiology, yeah.
Kinesiology, man. You major in something easy to say.
Right, you can say it better
than me. Hey, do what you do. My daughter's majoring in kinesiology.
See, Robert just had to show me that he can pronounce it better than me.
I had to learn that one, otherwise I get in trouble. Mm-hmm. Hell, this costing me money.
You better learn it when you're paying for it, right?
I what I'm paying for.
No, I'm proud of all of you, Mackenzie. Do what you do. And I got my co-host back, family, y'all. Reagan, how are you, Reagan?
Good.
Hey, let's go into the questions. Do you want to lead with the first few?
Yes.
All right, let's do it.
First question, what does HBCUs mean to you personally?
And let's go with.
I'll kick it off.
Okay, there you go.
Hey, so for me, I was, you know, for what it's worth, I was born into this, and born into the HBCUs. So, you know, earlier Alonzo said I was a super legacy. Well, I said I'm a super legacy. What I meant by that, my grandmother was one of the first graduating classes at North Carolina Central. She graduated in, I think, 1926 or 1927.
Wow.
And so, you know, she was there. I had an uncle who was a graduate of the law school, in the first graduating class of the law school. Another uncle, another aunt, both of them graduates. My sister, she's a graduate. Of course, I'm a graduate. Niece and nephew. Well, I'm sorry, my nephew. My niece went to that other school up in Greensboro. And my nephew, he's a graduate, of course, a host of cousins and whatnot. And as I just mentioned, my daughter is there playing basketball. Now she's on the ball team, which I'm very proud of. I have to say that she broke the school's three-point record, scoring record last night. She hit 12 three-pointers. She set a Division I for this era scoring record nationwide. So, you know, I love my NCCU. So, like I said, I was born into that. And that's what it means to me. It's about family. You know, from a very small age, HBCUs was part of my life, particularly NCCU. But my whole family, I think I can name a family member that's going to every school that's up here. You know, we have family members all across. And so it's meant a lot to me personally. And like I said, about me being there and back there again, full circle moment. So that's what that's what it means to me.
Man, that's beautiful. Thank you, brother. Thank you, Jessica.
HBCU to me means culture and it means pride. Mm-hmm. You know, us HBCUs, we don't holler out, you know, Aggie pride, Central pride, Bison pride, any of that for nothing. Like that's a part of who we are. And that, you know, means having pride in our culture. And also when it comes to culture, it's even more important these days. It's always been important, but it's even more important now, you know, with certain people doing their best to erase our culture and who we are and where we come from. And being a graduate of an HBCU and just being around all type of excellence that looks like me, it gives me pride in my culture, and it continues to do so.
Oh man, good answers. Brian.
HBCUs, like I'd say they're a home, and then also a way for a second chance. Like, you know, without getting too deep into my story, I was actually kicked out of Norfolk State And like a long story short, I ended up transferring to North Carolina Central, and it gave me a second chance.
Mm-hmm.
I was able to kind of hit the ground running and be able to connect with so many people that helped me to become successful there. It helped me start my business, helped me just like explore it and get as many opportunities as I could. And similar to, even Norfolk State, like, you know what I'm saying, like they were able to, like, you know, they give you grace, but then also hold you accountable. And I even being kicked out of there, I was grateful for them doing that because it changed my life. And going to Howard, like, you know, my mom taught at Howard. Both my parents went there. So I kind of grew up around the area. Like, you know, I used to walk to the, like, you know, all Georgia Avenue. It's the this is a restaurant called The Grill. And they have a shoe spot there. I used to walk there, like, as a kid, like, you know, after school. And it just, it's always been home. It's a place for us to feel welcome and be connected.
Man, thank you. I love what you touched on, accountability and grace. I absolutely love that. Mackenzie.
Yes, I agree with what everyone said, but it's family, it's culture, and it's legacy. So for me, it's honoring our past, our present, and our future. You know, it's reminding people where we come from and striving for greatness and better and, you know, to see, making it better for the people that are coming after us. So, you know, like A&T, we just celebrated 66 years of the Greensboro Four. You know, everyone knows the story. Four men that sat at the calendar, you know, started a whole movement. So it's a reminder. It's honoring those who have paved the way for us, honoring them, and then showing, seeing how we can continue to honor our legacy in our own way, in our own fight in this current day and time. So,
well said. Now, are you from Greensboro as well, Mackenzie?
I'm from Raleigh, so not too far. But
okay.
We had all the way past Durham. Like,
I did.
Jessica did the same thing, nephew.
It's crazy, man. A nice little school right past, like.
I've seen enough. It's close enough, you know, but A&T's fine.
Fair enough.
Oh, I love it. Reagan, what else you got?
Why did you choose a HBCU over a PWI?
I can start again. I was in high school during when COVID happened. It was my sophomore year. And of course, shut down, quarantine, that was a lot. I was out of school for not in person for about 2 years between like my sophomore and junior year. And the only interaction I had was with my white volleyball teammates because volleyball was the only thing I was in person at that time. And I kind of got, and of course, with everything going on with like George Floyd and protests and everything, I kind of got into the mindset of I'll be a minority all my life. Why not go somewhere where I'm a part of the majority? So that was kind of my deciding factor of why I wanted to go to HBCU, and I love my decision. Don't regret anything.
Yeah. I absolutely love that. So let's go with Brian now.
With the question was, why did I choose it? Mm-hmm. So it actually is funny. I actually wanted to go to University of Maryland so bad, like, but I didn't have the grades for it. Like, I really only kept my grades up just to play football. I was bad, like, you know what I'm saying? But, I actually kind of went to Norfolk State, like, kind of by accident. Like, I was trying to figure out what school I wanted to go to. I was talking to my cousin. He was like, why don't you go to Norfolk State? They just won the MEAC in football, and they just won the MEAC in basketball, and they beat Missouri. Like, this is, like, the year after that. So I was just like, okay, I applied. I wanted to get out of North Carolina, no offense to everybody, but I mean, I'm a DMV baby. So, like, you know what I'm saying? I'm used to the city. And Norfolk State was the only place that they said to me out of state. And I never knew where Norfolk was at, never knew what it looked like. And I went there, and that was home for a good 3 years. I will say that, like, you know, one thing that's unique about HBCUs, it gives people an opportunity, like, you know, that may not have the highest GPA or the best grades to be able to get the opportunity to get higher education. So I'm just thankful for it, you know, the opportunity that they give, you know.
Amen. Amen. Jessica.
Well, actually, my mother worked at A&T for like the first half of my life. And she worked in the student union. And growing up, A&T is what I knew. I would go to homecomings with her, and I would go to the parade and walk around campus. And I was always mesmerized by the atmosphere. And then I was also mesmerized by the students. My mom, you know, she had this amazing relationship with the students that would come into the student union. And growing up, that was family. That's what I knew. And I actually did not even apply anywhere else. I only applied to A&T. I had Aggie Pride painted on my bedroom wall as a child. So it would have shocked everyone to the core if I ended up going somewhere else. And like everyone else said, I don't regret it at all. A&T is just excellence, all of the professors, the atmosphere, the friendships, you know, that I still maintain today, what they taught me and how to carry myself in the professional realm. I mean, everything about it.
Stagnation and a dream deferred can experience deflation. lace. Because a dream deferred isn't just dry. Sometimes it molds, and sometimes tables ripe or the food gets cold. I want my food hot like a pocket or a fajita. Hatred is evil, and we have to beat her with love, with kindness, even when they get rough. Even when we're in the kitchen drinking from a paper cup, pressing for other options, but there's only one I know. But Dr. King never subscribed to violence. He said love was the only way to go. He said love without power is sentimental. A power without love can be bitter. This is consequential. He wanted to cook a new society where the hungry are fed, not fed by illusions, but opportunities instead. In the middle of chaos, he had the courage to stand. And now it's time to change the setting. Because the table, y'all, the table is the plan. Parlay the blueprint Dr. King left in our hands. Don't wait to be seated. A seat is what we all should demand. The plan can be solid, but we still have to pray. Challenge the system, even when we're pushed away. And for those who are afforded a seat, we can't get consumed with pride. We have to make room for your brother and sister and push no one aside. What can I say? I want to see that at the table. What can I say? You need to see that at the table. What can I say? We all need a seat at the table. We have a seat at the table, y'all.
Everything about it is just a blessing, and I don't regret it one bit.
Man, I love these answers. I love them. Chief Gaddy.
So I really had no other choice. And like Jessica, I only made one application. That was NCCU. Even after growing up in my family, and you know, and I tell everybody my family's like the Cosby family when it comes to, you know, Hillman was their chosen college for their family. NCCU was pretty much chosen, was mine. He had, matter of fact, he had really two choices, really. He had NCCU, he had Shaw University. Crazy enough, my wife, she's a graduate of Shaw. Oh, and so, yeah. And so, you know, it's always been HBCUs. I grew up in the eastern part of the state, originally from Washington, D.C., southeast, but we moved down here. And my family moved to New Bern, where my mom was from. And so I grew up in the eastern part of North Carolina near ECU. And I had a bunch of friends that went to ECU, but I never had the desire to go there. I had a couple friends and a few relatives that went to NC State and UNC, but my heart was set on NCCU. And so that's where I've been. And even my daughter, she transferred back here from University of Maryland, Eastern Shore. My youngest daughter was planning to go to Elizabeth City. She told me a couple of weeks ago, "Hey, Dad, I'm gonna go to NCCU." So it's in us, you know. It's what I know. It's what I know. Is what they know.
I love it. Now, I haven't shared this with many people. So when I graduated from high school, I was going to Central. That was what institution I selected, and I knew I wasn't ready. I was like very immature. Went at the party, and I told my mother, I said, "Hey, Mom, if you pay for me to go, that money is going to go down the drain." I said, "I can tell you now, I'm not ready." And so I took a 2-year break before I went to college. But I, as I was telling the first group, I do regret that I didn't attend a HBCU, especially the homecoming. Now, they beat me up because I've never been to an HBCU homecoming. And
we're gonna change that.
Wow. No, I'm saying, we got so much family.
I know, man. Yeah. Come on, nephew.
We're gonna change that, bro. And matter of fact, look, if you want to come over in uniform, we're gonna change that one.
We got to tailgate. Cause just like Chief Gaddy, like, you know, Dad's family, like, you know, is a lot of them went to Central, like, you know, so like they have a little plot, like, you know, for tailgating. And it's love every time. So.
Are you implying I should choose Central's homecoming versus A&T?
Yes.
Okay.
Choose the ultimate homecoming.
It's fine because Jiho is full anyway. So it's
100th. So
yeah. We can't come after we go to Central. Nah. Okay.
Oh. Hey Reagan, let's go with the next question.
Do you feel that HBCUs are competing with each other or PWIs, and why do you think they are, if they are?
So let's go with McKenzie.
Okay. I don't know if I would say HBCUs are competing with each other. Like, I know we joke and kiki, like, who's the best? Like, yeah. In that sense, yes, of course, we do compete for that best title. But in terms of, like, from a school standpoint, no, I don't think so, because every HBCU is unique in their own way. They all have their own, like, culture, atmosphere, their own thing to offer. Are we competing with PWIs? Well, no, because we don't want to be like them. But again, from a money standpoint, a school, a resources standpoint, I do think so, yes. Because HBCUs are known to be underfunded. So like, we don't have as much. We're trying to get there at the level. Like, if you look at North Carolina A&T and UNC Greensboro, schools right down from each other, but they look completely opposite. The resources are not the same. The facilities are not the same. You know, it just doesn't compare from a school standpoint. So unfortunately, yes, we are competing with PWIs, but just to better ourselves and better the lives of our students.
I love that. Thank you. Thank you. Chief Gaddy.
I was hoping you were going to skip me on this one, but now. you know, when I hear the question, you know, I think that we're competing in the sense that we all want the best students. Yes. You know, I think that's kind of where the line is drawn. But, you know, I feel some kind of way when I see our students not come to us, when I see them go to PWIs. Mm. And there's nothing wrong with that. But, you know, when I was at NCCU, I had a homeboy. He went to NC State. Mm-hmm. What I found out most weekends, he was over to NC Central.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, now granted, when I got there, it was probably the ratio was like 25-1. I get that. And yeah. So that was probably a lot of having to do with that. But the other side is, when you come to a HBCU, you see something that you recognize. Mm-hmm. When you go to a PWI, you got to find it.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so that's the competition, you know, trying to figure out where do you fit in there. Some of us figure it out, some of us don't, you know. And when you got to have a student black association or whatever they call it to fit in,
right?
That. You know, that just doesn't thrive with me, because it's just a matter of where am I going to fit in at NCCU? Mm. You know, who am I going to hang out with today? And I'm sure it was pretty much the same. You know, like, we had a different club. You had the Metro Club, which was folks from D.C. You had the folks from New York. You had a different club.
They're still there.
Yeah. And so, you know, that was our different groups. And so, but it, we all got in together. We all hung out at different times. And so I just, you know, I think that's when we talk competition in terms of, is there a comparison? There is no competition for me. I push HBCUs all day long. And now, you know, even young folks, hey, you need to look at HBCU. You need to find places and people that are going to treat you like the same. Well, you know, I may not get a job when I get out. There's just as many people from PWIs that are jobless as it is from HBCUs.
Yeah.
You know, but it's about the experience and what you take home and what you bring home and what you carry with you. I've never, ever regretted going to North Carolina Central and my HBCU experience. That has made me who I am.
These are great questions, man. Nuggets, I appreciate that. Jessica.
Yeah. So I will build upon what some of the things that McKenzie said. Do we compete with each other? No. I'd say we have friendly rivalry. but we also know what our strengths are. You know, when it comes to A&T, we can't say that we have one of the best HBCU law schools around, you know, in Central, they can't say that they graduate the most African-American engineers from their college. So, mm-hmm. you know, we all have our strengths, right?
Yeah.
And we build upon them and we build our legacies. So no competition, some rivalry here and there. But as everybody else said, you know, it's all just team HBCU over here. And also when it comes to competing with PWIs, I also don't feel like we compete with them either. I agree and understand with what Mackenzie said about the funding. However, I also feel as though when it comes to Black people, it's also in us to make do with what we have. We've been doing that for centuries upon centuries. Mm-hmm. And while we don't get as much funding as PWIs do, we still produce greatness with what we have. And again, I still have pride in my HBCUs. I'm still proud of what we do, what we have done, and what we'll keep doing in the future.
Man, I love these answers. Nephew, what you got?
So I told y'all, like, it's a roundabout way that I got to Central. So ironically enough, like, I ended up, after Norfolk State, I ended up spending a semester at NC State. And it was like a fish out of water, like, you know, going from, like, you know, all your class full of Black people to, you know, it's about five of y'all in a classroom, a lecture hall or whatever. And I just felt like another number, like, you know, there. And it was an interesting time. It was around the time of, like, Philando Castile getting shot and Colin Kaepernick protesting and stuff like that. And, you know, it was just, I remember this time I was in class and they were talking about what's going on in sports right now. And I was like, Colin Kaepernick. And they were naming baseball players and stuff. I'm just like, y'all don't really care about, you know, yeah. what we going through and stuff. And so it was just an interesting time. And but when I went to Central, it was just like soon as I, like, you know, got accepted, like, you know, I instantly got help. I instantly found community. I instantly found, like, you know, reconnected with people that, like, you know, I went to high school with, like, you know, and everything. It was love, like, you know, and all of us, you know, like you said, we have rivalries, like, you know, Norfolk State and Hampton got Battle of the Bay, Howard and Hampton got the Real HU, Central and the Aggies. What is it called again? I don't remember what
that Eagle Aggie.
Is it? Yeah, Eagle Aggie. They
may say Aggie Eagle.
I really wasn't. I didn't know, but
alphabetical order.
But nah, it's like, it's always love, you know, we jam with each other. We go to different conferences and then it's like, you know, you meet people from different HBCUs and y'all like, you know, who's better? We got a better lunch hall and we had better food or whatever. It was, you know, but it's all love at the end of the day. And, you know, we got to come together and figure out ways to improve ourselves. Like one of the things is I think about is like alumni donations and stuff like that. They're like, you know, I don't really got that bag like that to donate like that, but, you know, but that's one thing that we can do, like, to take ownership of ourselves, you know, instead of worrying about, like, what the PWI is getting and what we're not getting, you know.
Man.
Hey, can I throw this in there real quick?
Yeah, always.
You know, it's always, you know, when we all get together, there's a lot of banter and fun, jovial fun that goes back and forth. But at the end of the day, don't step to us, because we're gonna bind together, mm-hmm. and that's when you're gonna find out what time it really is. So, you know, it's all love in this room here.
Oh yeah,
you can't come in this room from a PWI somewhere else thinking you're gonna get in and think you fit in, because it ain't gonna happen, because it's 100.
Mm-hmm.
This is the friendly competition. You know, and I am not even a part of it, but I'm entertained by the back and forth. It's pretty cool. But it's kind of like I do my co-hosts all the time where they do me. But I wanted to ask you, Nephew, so you said you were at NC State at a very critical time socially.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like was the institution responsive? I'm not trying to call out anyone, but I just want to know, like, did you feel like your institution at the time was responsive when it came to George Floyd, for instance? Because to me, the entire nation, for the most part, seem to come together and rally behind the cause. So what? Yeah.
I actually wasn't there at that time.
Okay.
I got there around 2016. So that was like Philando Castile. I don't know if you ever.
Okay.
Like,
yeah.
He got shot while his wife and his kid were in the car.
Yeah.
I just remember seeing that, and there was like studies that show like even if you see videos like in secondhand that you get traumatized from them, and that's like kind of the first I seen of like, you know, that type of situation. So I was going through a lot being kicked out of Norfolk State and like, you know, trying to navigate that and then seeing these, and it just felt like nobody cared. I just felt like a number, and I feel like I just coming to class, the teachers didn't really care if I was succeeding or not. You know, it was just a lot of things. And it was around the time of the Trump elections, like, you know, or am I allowed to say Trump on it? I'm just joking. That's a whole nother thing. But yeah, this is around all those times. So it just felt like, you know, I wasn't in a good space. Mm-hmm. Ironically enough, I don't know if you know Moses Green, a shout out to Moses. Like, you know, he did a lot of stuff in Raleigh and in the Black community. He actually became the director of the African Americans, African American Cultural Center at NC State. And just like Chief Getty was saying, like, you know, it's crazy that you had to have like a whole center just to, like, you know, for Black people to, you know, feel included. So ironically enough, I kind of dropped out of school the semester before he became the director and stuff, but I still was going to, like, you know, events afterwards, just to kind of, like, you know, gain that community. But you know, I can only imagine how many people like felt like me, you know, and decided not to finish school, like, you know what I'm saying, because I had that choice too, to decide not to go to school afterwards or go back, you know, and Central gave me that opportunity, and Howard did as well. Like,
man, well said, well said. And so we asked y'all about and thank you again, nephew, all of you. Mm-hmm. We asked about the competition piece, and I think it was McKenzie who talked about the resources, if I'm not mistaken, but resources, and Jessica said something too. I got to touch on how we're resilient. We may not have comparable resources, but we're able to reimagine and really succeed. But I guess the question when you talk about, is it sustainable? So what does success look like for HBCUs 10 years from now?
Club is located at 1409 Cross Street in Raleigh. Stop by Nature's 360 Cafe for your herbs, favorite acai bowls, smoothies, and juices. And join us for Mental Health, Wealth, and Wellness Mondays.
Come get your $25
back. What I will tell you, like at NCCU, so we have now, I think we have one of the first AI programs of in HBCU. Mm-hmm. And so it's, you know, we got a bunch of money from Google. And so I think the next decade is going to be defined by innovation, digital expansion. Of course, enrollment's growing. And that's a key point right there. That enrollment must continue to grow.
It is growing, you say.
Yes. Oh, yes. Cool. Yes, absolutely. And I tell you this, the one place where we've seen it is online. The online learning has really grown. Mm-hmm. You know, of course, housing, a lot of us, you know, a lot of HBCUs are facing the same thing. And so, like, you take Howard only guarantees housing your freshman year. Mm-hmm. After that is when if you can get in early, you got it. And we're at the same point. I think A&T is probably at the same point as well.
Mm-hmm.
But when you talk about the next decade, we're going to be defined by innovation, digital expansion. We're going to be looking at enrollment, you know, and stronger national visibility. What does that look like? You know, whether it's football games or basketball games that are now being broadcast on ESPN and different channels. But, you know, there's always still going to be the challenges surrounding what we just talked about, funding, infrastructure, yeah. that kind of thing. You know, infrastructure. And as on the police department side, I'm facing right now, we have servers that are probably 10 years out of being, you know, worth anything. They're 10 years old. And so, you know, obviously at probably 1 or 2 years old, your server's probably out of date. And so technology, that kind of thing is what's going to be, that's going to poise us to move and look really good in the future. And so, we're going to need to continue to develop innovation, bringing in programs like your AI program, expanding on that. And because, you know, everybody knows AI is it. That is the future. Mm-hmm. And so capitalizing on things like that, but trying to figure out how to increase our funding, whether it's alumni giving it back, whether it's the government funding us. That's what it's going to look like in 10 years if those things happen. But like I said, for me, what I see, like I said, I think our AI program is going to take off, and that's going to take us to a different level. Now, whether the funding comes back from our graduates or not, who knows, or continued funding from different places like Google, that's going to be the question, the key.
Man, I love it. That's deep. McKenzie, 10 years from now, you'll be through with school and all. What does it look like? What does A&T look like?
A&T looks like trying research. I don't know if many of you know, but they're trying to become an R1 school, which is, I guess, the top tier, highest tier within the research realm against other universities. Mm-hmm. So I'm not a university official, so I don't really know all the specifics behind it, but mm-hmm. I know I've seen the changes on campus already. Like, even with my own department, kind of moving our classroom spaces around to make room and cater towards research. My department, we now have an EPIC lab. So, like, some of our professors who have the PhDs and who are certified to conduct research, they have their own space now. They're bringing in professors who strictly do research. I know my professor, she teaches, my class is her one and only class. The rest of the day, she's in her lab doing research. So to me, the next 10 years, it looks like expanding and growing, again, on the more technological front of things and research advancements. And also, I think it's where the money also kind of comes into play, too, because with research, you can get grants. And grants help fund and pay for things, whether it's more research, whether it's supplies for students, whatever it may be. But it looks like more of a still catering to students, hopefully, but just expanding on the research front.
Wow. I love that. I did not know. So thank you so much for sharing that with us. Jessica.
Well, both of them had actually touched on a lot of my points. One being evolving into
yeah.
One being, involving into the state where we are now. He mentioned AI, and then also being more technologically advanced, mm-hmm. Which I'm sure that A&T is doing that because we are a technological university. So I have no doubt about that. And even going back onto campus now, since I graduated in 2013, it looks completely different. So evolution and adapting, I know that my HBCU will not have a problem with that. But as a whole, I think that HBCU should definitely lean into their strengths. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, when it comes to our culture, we feel like we have to work twice as hard to be as good as our counterparts. Mm-hmm. And I think that we put a lot of that pressure on ourselves to yeah. be the best at everything. But hopefully going forward, maybe, you know, we can lean into our strengths that are unique to each of our HBCUs. We may not be able to be the best and the most funded at every single thing, and that's okay. But we can excel in the areas that we are strong in. And then lastly, I think Chief already touched on it, but more hybrid learning models, especially in this day and age, a lot of things have really turned more virtual. And while I'm sure that there are some virtual classes, maybe making them more widely available to provide that universal access to for more of us to get that education.
Man, you knocked it out the park, Jessica. I appreciate you. All of your grind.
Yeah, I got stuff now. Like, that helped me kind of, you know, you got to, yeah, I want me, you know.
That's it's a family thing, yeah.
Nah, that's a really good question, man. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, everybody was saying, like, our HBCUs that have, like, you know, some things that they specialize in. Mm-hmm. Like Jessica was saying, I know for Norfolk State, they have a very strong cybersecurity, like, you know, department. And like Howard, if I'm not wrong, they graduate the most doctors, black doctors. And Central has the AI, like, you know, I think that, like, you know, being able to, like, you know, lean into those and, like, you know, and be able to be representation, like, you know, having those representation is very exciting. Like, you know, I think even with sports, I'm a big sports fan. I like, you know, helped Central and Howard with their football teams. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, and even with Deion, what he did with Jackson State and being able to kind of get that spotlight on that, like, you know what I'm saying? I feel like, you know, hopefully we move toward a place where 5-star, you know, players and 4-stars, whoever, like, you know, are going, like, trying to look to HBCUs to try to elevate those, like, you know, places. And just, like, you know, and I, being able to be like, hey, I went to, like, you know, I went to A&T, I went to Central, I went to Howard, like, you know, I went to Tennessee State, like, you know, just like letting these people, like letting these put a spotlight on these schools and let them be seen. I don't know if y'all seen the commercial at the Super Bowl. Like, there was, like, a little boy, he was saying the affirmations. And then there was a guy, like, he was in the huddle and he was, like, you know, speaking to them. He mm-hmm. actually went to Norfolk State. He's an alumni of Norfolk State. So I'm like, imagine my shock, like, you know, to see him on the screen. But he's been in a few things, like, you know, I know that Central has a big, a good mass communication studio, TV studio. Norfolk State has a strong mass communication program. Like, you know, these places being able to, like, you know, expand and get bigger productions. The modernization of buildings, like, you know, Norfolk State has done a really, if you saw how it was in 2011 mm-hmm. to how it is now, it's a whole different place, like, you know. And also the expansion of homecomings, I'm excited about that as well. Like, you know, because, you know, it's nothing better than a HBCU homecoming, you know, so.
An HBCU homecoming or a Central homecoming? Or
really, between Norfolk State and Central, these some of the best homecomings I've been to. And I'm not even trying to be biased. I've been to different ones. But, yeah, you can't. Those are hard to top, you know.
So, I'm trying to figure out where I'm gonna do my first homecoming. That's why I'm.
You already know. We got the barbecue place waiting for you. You got your name.
I got you, man. Hey, that was a great answer, nephew. All of y'all dropped some nuggets. Chief Gaddy talked about the partnerships with private companies. I think Jessica touched on evolution. So let me ask y'all this, because I think it's important. That's one thing we study in business ethics, right? So how do HBCUs evolve without losing their soul, right? Mm-hmm. And I think I'll start with, I'm going to start with McKenzie on that one.
That's a great question, because my dad went to A&T, right? So my dad went to A&T, and I have my uncle in A&T, and so I grew up around A&T for sure. Grew up going homecoming, grew up going to the games. You know, I grew up blue and gold. I have an outfit wearing a little A&T cheerleading outfit when I was younger. So I grew up around it, and the stories my dad would tell me do not compare to what it is now. And really? I think part of that, right, yeah. So I think part of that has to do with, of course, technology. You know, everyone's in their phones now. Mm-hmm. there's no real need for real one-on-one conversation, you know, to a stranger. So asking me what it, like, how do you maintain that culture is hard, because I hate to say it, but I feel like we may be losing it a tad bit, especially when we're trying to talk about evolving and growing from like a research, competing with PWIs kind of standpoint. Yeah. But I think alumni play a huge part in maintaining the soul of the university. That's why I always love when they hire back alumni, yeah, you know, yeah, in these higher positions. I'm all for hiring the alumni. Please bring them back. Bring them back, because they know what ANC was like. They were here. They lived it. They know what the students are like. You know, they know what it's like to be a student at ANC, you know, and now they can come back to help better the lives of students and faculty at the university. So I'm a big like supporter of bringing the alumni back, putting Aggies in higher up positions to make a change for the betterment of their students, faculty, alumni, everyone involved with the university. So I think that's the best and probably biggest way of helping maintain the soul while still evolving and growing with the times. Wow.
I love that answer. Great answer. Brian.
Yeah. I think that goes like, you know, back to like kind of all money is not good money. Like I think about like, you know, one of the things is like that kind of takes away from homecomings now is like the branding, like, you know, brand partnerships. Like sometimes it's just like, it's like, all right, we just want to enjoy HBCU, like the homecoming experience. We don't want to deal with all the, like, you know, extra, like, you know, Norfolk State had like Pepsi, like a Pepsi stage, like, you know, one year. And it's just like, it'd be a lot. And it kind of takes away from the natural feel of just vibing, being able to connect with, you know, like the people you haven't seen in a while, people like, you know, you just meet, like, you know. And I also agree with Mackenzie as far as like, you know, bring like, you know, people that's been there before, instead of just getting outside, like external, like, you know, people, just like, you know, staying true to that soil, you know what I'm saying? So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I love that in the example you gave about the private company and at Norfolk. Wow.
Oh, and I'll say this too, like a lot of, unfortunately, a lot of HBCUs are state funded. So they kind of have to go, partially go with like, you know, some protocols that like, you know, the state wants, like, you know, so that's an unfortunate thing unless the school is private. So.
Very good point. Very good point. Thank you. Thank you. Let's go with Jessica.
A lot of what they said as well. And I think storytelling is a big part as well. Even in the African-American culture as a whole, a lot of our history and a lot of our culture are passed down through our family members who got their stories from their ancestors. Like she said, bringing in more alumni to, you know, teach our students, maybe bring them in on campus just to talk about how, you know, A&T has been, how the culture has been over the years, and just keeping the culture alive through storytelling and folklore, I guess you could say. Because I would love to do that myself, because back in my day, we were A&T. I don't know where this NCAT thing came from. And if I could just come together and stand in the middle of the yard and just yell, like, it's A&T, not NCAT, I would.
I've never heard of
No.
I haven't heard that. So that's what they call A&T now?
Something like that. Y'all got a lot of initials. Like,
man, I feel old. I never heard that until just now.
Yeah,
well,
common one is NCAT. Like, they'll put it on tweets and Instagram. People actually say, oh, I got an NCAT. Okay.
I would love to know who came up with that, because they probably need to get shaken pretty hard.
No, but just keeping our culture alive through folklore, storytelling, and, you know, reliving the culture of A&T from 1891 on.
Wow. I love it. Love those answers.
I agree. I think also with that, like, to tie it together is, like, you know, getting our people, I don't know, you might have said that, I'm sorry, but getting our people to tell the story, you know what I'm saying? Instead mm-hmm. of, like, you know, outside, like.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So. Absolutely. Hmm.
Yeah, when we stopped recording, I want to hear if Mackenzie was talking about her dad and the differences. I mean, that's a whole nother episode probably, but I'd be curious to know how that looked. I had Dr. Livingston on. He's a professor at Central on the first half, and Reagan, 1973, he said? So you can only imagine the differences from 73
to now. You ain't got to go that far.
Yeah,
I can tell you what it looked like in 1989 versus 2026. It's wow. For me.
Yeah. It looks way different now.
You know, when I got here in 89 as a student, we had one male dorm, mm-hmm. Chitley Hall. And I think 87, 88, it was the first co-ed dorm. As a matter of fact, I was hanging out with a guy this weekend. I think he was one of the first people to live in a co-ed dorm. But the only res hall was Chidley for men. And the women, all everything else, Eagleson, Baines, all those, Latham, mm-hmm. they were all female dorms.
Crazy.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, we were on way on one side. We were on Austin Avenue. Everybody else is on the other side of campus. And so if you want to just visit your girlfriend, you had to walk across campus. You know, in terms of food, if you didn't have a car, you were there was a place called CD's, which is right there beside the communications building on Fayetteville Street. It's now a beauty salon, or it's something else different now. Yeah. They had CD's, but there was no Burger King close. There was no Kentucky Fried or KFC close. Nothing was close. Matter of fact, there was a Church's Chicken.
Yeah,
at Fayetteville and across from St. Joseph's Church. That was about it. You either caught the bus to the mall or you walk. But when you come on campus now, they have Pizza Hut, they have Chick-fil-A, they have Panda Express, they have a Cinnabon. All the campus, all the dorms, all the res halls, I'm sorry. See, I keep giving my age out. They call residential halls now. I've been to several meetings. I've been corrected on that. It's not a dormitory. I'm like, well, excuse me. When I was here, it was dorms. But no, you know, so you have all, you know, you have, like, when we first started, you had girls on one floor, guys on another, girls, guys, like that. That's how it went. Or you have guys at the bottom and all the girls at the top or something like that. Now, uh-huh. girl, guy, girl, guy, girl, guy. It's just, they're all mixed in. And so when I got there, it was truly cultural shock. Like, huh? You know, I remember having to sneak my girlfriend to my dorm room, like, hey, come on. And almost getting caught. Or if you get caught, you get in trouble and all kinds of stuff. And so it's a complete different campus. That's just one aspect. When you look at the buildings and, you know, even something that's important to us as campus law enforcement, building access where you have cards to get in, that kind of stuff. You know, before you could prop a door open and go in and out that door all night. Of course, that was, you know, now that I look at it, it was stupid. It was mm-hmm. dangerous.
Unsafe.
Very unsafe. And, on our campus, we have over 1,800 cameras, mm-hmm. you know, and so innovations like that, it's a different campus, you know, and I'll tell you this. So, like, as I told you, I started here as a student in 1989. Mm-hmm. We do a research paper. I was talking about this in class a couple of weeks ago. I was talking about footnotes. Mm-hmm. And like, what are you talking about, footnotes? So, you know, we had to type it on a typewriter, and then and so, like, you know, you do the in-text citations now on APA style format or whatever you want to call it. But you put like a little one there, and then at the bottom you put the reference and all that kind of stuff. That was what we did for term papers. Now, you know, you can do hell. This I'm figuring out this AI stuff. We can just about write you one. You know, of course, there's. There's things that we'll check for that stuff, but coming out of the classroom, and you know, I graduated NCCU in 1994, or actually December 93, and coming back in the classroom in 2024, it's night and day. You know, everything's computerized, you have these hybrid classes where I can sit in the classroom or be here at home and take the class, and I'm like, huh? I don't have to come here. I can. It's night and day, man.
Wow, wow. I remember my professor talking about Central and the Chicago style footnotes and how it was so much easier. We had it made compared to Central students. So, but now let me ask you this. I asked everyone else about maintaining their soul. What do you say to that question?
Well, it's kind of, I think I can summarize it with what everybody has talked about. You know, the way you're going to maintain this in this new environment, you have to ground your innovation with your mission and your history. Mm-hmm. And, you know, even though as technology advances, we still got to maintain our traditions. We got to hold our values, our community-centered leadership. We got to, those things are important to us. But we're still, you know, still while ensuring progress, but make sure that the progress doesn't replace who we are. It doesn't replace our cultural identity, that kind of thing. And I think if you ground who we are into those things and build it into your new innovations, whatever that is, whether it's a new program or a new funding source, make sure that they know who we are, no matter who sits in Washington, D.C., or who sits in Raleigh, they can't replace who we are. We're going to stay true to ourselves.
Man, thank you. We need to take this on the road and go to HBCUs across the country. You guys are, I'm telling you,
let's do it.
The world, that's some good stuff, man. Hey, Reagan, I'm throwing the mic back to you doing that Walls
Group. Hey, does Reagan ever smile? That's why I need to know.
Hey, this is her first time on the show, y'all.
Okay, all right. Hey, all right, we'll give you a pass.
And she's what, Reagan, ninth grade? Mm-hmm. I'm so proud of Reagan, man.
Awesome.
But she's smiling inside.
She's smiling now. She was serious. I was like, man, this is, she's a tough interviewer. Oh,
you're doing a great job, Reagan.
I thought I was on CNN.
He thought she was on CNN.
Oh, what you got, Reagan?
What does the future look like for HBCUs financially and enrollment-wise? Do you think they will survive with my new generation going to PWIs more?
Mm. Hey, let's get at the Chief Gaddy first.
Well, wow. Hey, look, I feel like nephew on this one. Like, wow, you hit me really, really hard. No. So, you know, what we've seen is an increase. We've seen a steady increase of people coming back to HBCUs. When you got somebody in Washington that's cutting out everything about financial aid, making it virtually impossible for a lot of us financially to attend these PWIs, you see our kids coming home. And I'm hoping that that's a trend that will continue into the future. You know, I don't see us falling back on enrollment. What I see is gaining more strength and continuing to move forward. And so the key thing, though, is the funding.
Mm-hmm.
If he doesn't, you know, we'll have state funding. I think we're in a good space with that. But it's just a matter of what does the federal funding look like? Where will we end up in that? And so what does our future look like? Right now, if you ask me, it looks great. It looks, you know, I think A&T is experiencing record enrollment. You know, the other side, though, is as we're moving on, as a culture, as a university, whatever, how we do, we still got to reach back and pull people through like St. Aug, mm-hmm. Barber Central College. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of universities that are struggling. Now, though, their fate looks different than ours because we are state supported. A lot of those are private. You know, and that's where I think where our big alumni or even some of these big donors need to step in and help out. You know, I'll be honest with you. If I had the money, I'd have built St. Aug out a long time ago and said, hey, y'all got to survive, too. Mm-hmm. And now, of course, that had to come with getting rid of some board members.
Mm-hmm. With accountability.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, some stipulations. They got to go.
Boy, you're speaking some.
They got all them got to go. And we're going to rebuild the scene. But, you know, I think overall, you know, your state supported HBCUs, the future looks great. I think that's where you see the enrollment increases. Where we suffer is HBCUs are our smaller places like Barber Scotia, who's fighting to get accreditation back and forth. I think last count was less than 200 students. And actually less than that, I think, last go around. And, you know, if you're not familiar with Barber Scotia, it's up near Concord. It's in Concord. Mm-hmm. My aunt graduated from there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but trying to also, the alumni, we as alumni of these universities, we hold responsibility to that too. We've got to make sure we're doing our part. Whether, you know, whether it's $5 or $5,000, we've got to do our part. And so that's, you know, that's going to be the future of any of our HBCUs, that alumni continue to give back. But the ones that aren't hurting, reaching back and helping these other ones.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Great answer. Mackenzie.
Yes, I agree with everything Chief Gaddy said. I do think schools like A&T, state-funded schools, we are in a better position. And again, like A&T record enrollment, I feel like we keep beating ourselves every year. So, I mean, the people want to come to A&T. Like, I don't really think that's going to change, especially with TikTok and social media. We post something, everyone loves it. Oh, now I want to go to A&T. Oh, yay. the growth is there. But I think with growth, enrollment-wise, we need to grow building-wise. Because, of course, housing is an issue. Classroom sizes aren't big enough. You know, and like we have a new dorm opening up this spring. Hopefully, I think it'll be done by the end of the semester. But we have to be able to house our students and like have a place for them to come and learn and live on campus. Because HBCUs, it is home. But I'm sure to those students who are in a hotel right now, it doesn't really feel like home to them, you know? Here they got to pay for their own breakfast through the hotel food service. You know, it's just like, I want them to have the experience that I had coming to A&T, you know, having that first year on campus experience. I love living on campus, you know? I love my apartment too. So, you know, I feel like everyone does deserve at least 1 year on campus to be able to walk to your friends, be able to walk to the cab, walk to the stew. You know, that's a part of it. So, we're going to keep growing, yes, but I have to also grow, you know, physically and building-wise to help maintain that enrollment and growth as well.
Wow. And I'm glad you said that because, and I forgive me for not doing research on this. I didn't even think about that question, but across the board at most HBCU, from my lens, and again, I have not done any research on it, it seems like housing and food tend to be the main issues that the students express on campus. Am I right or wrong? What, I mean, y'all attended.
Housing to get your protest on.
and the refund checks too, like the financial aid, like, you know.
Oh, man.
Proverbs 21:5 tells us, if you plan and work hard, you will have plenty. Yet for many, money feels stressful and overwhelming. If you're tired of worrying about bills and debt, there's a better way. Kira Speed, a financial coach, helps individuals and families walk in wisdom and peace with their money. And she can help you build a plan that aligns with your spiritual values and also helps you feel empowered with your money so that you can save, pay down debt, and build wealth for you and your family. Interested in learning more? Visit moneyempowered.com. to schedule your free 60-minute consultation.
I think Chief Getty was saying, some of these institutions, they kind of like they've had people in office for a long time, and it's really antiquated, like, you know what I'm saying, and they kind of got to go. You know, I think that's kind of part of it. And also I think Jessica was saying, I think our HBCUs are like a lot of gridlock, like landlocked or whatever. A lot of them are built in, like, you know, like there's housing around. So in order for us to expand, we would have to, like, you know, buy up people that's been living there for years. So it's just trying to find, like, innovative ways to either, like, you know, change buildings that's on campus, or, like, you know, or just be creative about, like, you know, how they expand. I know a few people that went to Central that, like, you know, had to go, like, live in a hotel, like, down the street. And it's, like, it's not the same experience as being on campus. Like, you know, it's nothing like being on campus your freshman year and just experiencing that.
I'll say eminent domain. That is coming. And you talk about expansion. So the long term project for NCCU, if you're familiar with it or not familiar, is go from Cecil Street over to Burlington. And so we've acquired several homes
around that area. And it displaces what you just said, a lot of historical or people in those neighborhoods.
Yeah.
But you have to, it's almost like choosing the lesser of two evils. Mm-hmm. Do you stop expanding your university, or do you preserve the neighborhood? And it's a hard pill to swallow. We have a church, and you all may be familiar with it. It's a church at Martha Street and Fayetteville Street.
Mm-hmm.
Church has been abandoned Stone for Street. Years.
Yeah. The stone one across the street?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so we own that church. Now, it's filled with asbestos and mold and all that kind of stuff, but we're having a hard time to tear it down. Because they're like, well, that's a neighborhood landmark. Yeah, but you can't go in there and have service. You can't, you know, you can't even go in there and use the bathroom because you're going to get ate up by asbestos.
Sure.
And so that's the things you'll run into, because we have a lot of historical things around us. There, you know, if you go down to the other end of Fayetteville, there's the Scarborough home where the funeral home was founded. That's a historical landmark. And so you run into things like that that sometimes interrupt growth. But where do you stop? Do you stop your growth, or do you ask for forgiveness and let's tear it down and keep it moving?
Wow. Wow. Things to think about.
Sorry, can I say something to that point? Because I didn't know all that. But I think to that point, lesser to you, that I agree. But that's where the storytelling comes back into play. Bringing back in what Jessica said, like storytelling of those historical landmarks and what was here. And if it does get tore down, I know it's probably not good enough to the people who have lived there and grown up there, but a nice plaque or statue, you know, just something to honor what was here. Right. Like, we don't forget.
For sure.
They did it with Confederate soldiers. We can do the same thing.
Right.
Yeah. I you know, back to those points, like, you know, preserving the history. I didn't know about, you said Barbara Scotia, like,
Yes, HBCU. It's in Concord, and they've been like on the chopping block for you. They've been fighting. Like, I have to give them, they brought a president in, and he's done everything to keep them financially going. But there's some serious financial issues there. They owe City of Concord some money. There's a lot. If you Google it in Barbara Scotia College, you'll see kind of where they are and. Their enrollment is seriously down. Like, I read the other day that they were down to probably, there was probably like 20 or 30 students.
Oh, wow.
Wow. Yeah.
That's crazy.
See, I never even heard of that. And like, I remember I had an assignment and while I was like an intern at Central, like listing all the HBCUs, and I've never heard of that, like HBCUs. So like us, like, you know, using our platforms to, like, you know, carry those stories and highlight, you know, unknown HBCUs and struggling HBCUs, like to move them forward, like, you know, because it's like, what's it like? It's like the quote from Dr. King. I'm kind of paraphrasing, but like, suffering in one place is suffering in another. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Our struggle, if they're struggling, we're struggling too. You know what I'm saying?
That's right.
Absolutely.
And then with that, though, I think while HBUs as a whole are growing and expanding, but I feel in cases like that, it would be a good idea to go back to the drawing board of what worked. And what I mean by that is, so when I graduated from high school in 2009, we had, and remember I told you guys, I always knew that I was going to A&T.
Mm-hmm.
But we had this thing called on-site acceptance, mm-hmm. where HBCUs came out to these high schools and they looked at their resume. We had to print out our school report, our transcript. Mm-hmm. And, you know, all of our information, and we sat across the table from a recruiter and they accepted us or denied us on site. And I think that type of visibility, going out to these schools, going out into different communities, showing faces, letting yourself be known. I knew about colleges like Barbara Scotia, but how often do they actually go out and make themselves visible?
Right.
Mm.
how often do they go out and tell their own stories?
Yeah.
So in those instances, going back to the drawing board, to things that worked while expanding and growing at the same time.
Wow. Wow. That's deep. Thank you. What else you got, Reagan?
Well, we're the majority and the majority in HBCUs. How does it feel to go to an HBCU where there's like everything switched? We're the majorities and then whites are the minorities. How does that feel? If there is other races that go to HBCUs, how does it feel to see them interact in our community, so to speak?
Oh, let's go with Jessica.
Well, it's always been interesting. Well, during that time when I was in college, it was interesting seeing them. But now, as an adult, I'm here for it because a lot of the issues that we have now when it comes to race is because of ignorance and because they don't see the things that we see. They aren't in our shoes. They aren't in the environment that we are in on a daily basis. So seeing some of the other backgrounds on our campus, I'm here for it because of the education. Here's Black excellence. Here is Black people getting their degrees to move up in the world. Like, we're not all a monolith.
Right.
So I would say I like to see it. As long as it doesn't come with entitlement. I'll leave it at that.
Mm. Indeed. Brian.
Yeah, I agree. It was always interesting. I think the majority of the people that were like of a different race, like, you know, they either came like for like a band scholarship or like a sports scholarship. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, that's a lot of times I did see them. It was very few that were just like, I'm just here, you know, because this is the school that accepted me. And then even then, I'm not sure how many cases it was, but I believe, like, you know, some of them are able to get a minority scholarship because they're going to the HBCU instead of like a PWI. So, but like Jessica said, it's like, you know, they get an opportunity to see people in a different Black people in a different light, you know, and not like, you know, what the stereotypical thing is. And you know, it's cool to see them swag surf or like, you know what I'm saying, or you know, be at the party turn and gain friends, like, you know what I'm saying. I think the biggest thing, like the best thing, if we haven't saw from the halftime show, what was that, Sunday, like, is diversity is, like, you know, it's an important thing, like, you know what I'm saying, like, you know, if we look through one lens, then we may be missing out and overlooking a whole group of people.
So. Preach, preach, preach. Thank you. Mackenzie.
I kind of have a different viewpoint, only because I, like most minorities or like white students or students, you know, who just aren't Black, who are on campus, like Ryan said, they are mostly here for a scholarship of some sort or to play for a team. That's the majority of the ones that I see around campus. And even then, I don't see them really engage with the culture, or like I've never really seen them at homecoming. Granted, homecoming is a lot of people, so I could just miss them. But I don't really see them at like the Aggie Fest or the GHO lineup events. So I'm just wondering, like, did you just come here for the minority scholarship and to play your sport? Did you really come here to, like, how much of the culture are you really learning or appreciating or interpreting, you know? Because to me, it looks like you just came here to ball out or play your instrument and then, you know, or just get a degree. Because I have seen some students who are literally just here because of their degree in the program, and they, you know, of course, we have the best program, so they wanted to come, which is great. You know, get your education. That's what everyone's here for. but then I see them, then I see them go back home, you know, or like I'll see them in the parking lot of my apartment, just headed back to the room. So I'm like, I'm just wondering, like, how much of the culture are you really experiencing or gaining or, you know, taking in? So yeah, that's kind of how I feel about it.
Interesting. I never knew that part, but thank you. Thank you. Chief Gaddy.
Yeah, so for me, coming to NCCU was an experience because throughout my elementary school, I was in the minority. Junior high school, elementary, junior high, even high school was in the minority. Up until probably about the, I think, fifth or sixth grade, I was the only black boy in my class. I went to private school, and then I hit high school, and from ninth grade to graduation to my senior year, it was we were there, but it wasn't as many of us. And so when I come to NCCU and all I see is us, I'm like, I think I found my spot. I'm here. And then I see a few white folks every now and then. I'm like, oh, there's one right there, you know, that kind of thing. Funny enough, Alonzo, you remember Kelly Starkey Watson?
Yeah, yeah.
She was one of my classmates at NCCU in criminal justice. Wow. And so this was a white female that we worked with. She was from West Virginia. But, you know, she actually hung out a little bit. She didn't do a whole lot of hanging out. But you would see them every now and again. And so after a while, I got used to it, you know. And, you know, I think anyone up here would say when you go to a place and a lot of white people, you're looking for the first black person you see. And so, you know, it was nice not to be like that at NCCU. I come in and we everywhere.
Oh, I love the answers. Thank y'all. Reagan, your last question. What do you have?
So if you could say anything to every person that has overseen HBCUs on how to improve them for the next generations, if you could say the top three things in your opinion that you think will influence more enrollment but also better them, what would you say?
Wow. Wow. So who do we want to take a crack at that one first? Do we want to, is that a good one?
I would say, cause I remember talking to someone at like a conference. It was a National Association of Black Journalists. Mm-hmm. And I think about like, you know, how much older, like, you know, some PWIs are compared to HBCUs. Mm-hmm. And I try to kick it like, you know, we're kind of like a startup company in a sense, like, you know what I'm saying? So it's like, you know, we still have so much room to grow and expand. So why not invest? Why not, like, you know, pour into, like, you know, HBCU? And like, you never know where it'll go. Like, you know, it's I feel like it's untapped potential, because we've been working with just little scraps of things, like, you know what I'm saying? And like, you know, where imagine what we could do if we were able to be, like, you know, funded more and we were able to get more enrollment and you know, things of that nature.
Man, I love it. I love it. Thank you, nephew. Jessica.
So three things that I would tell those who oversee HBCUs. That was a question, right?
Mm-hmm.
I would say to focus on expanding the pipeline from the college campuses to professional careers. I don't know how much it has changed since I was in school, but I know when I was in school, like internship.
Vision, collard greens, squash and tomatoes, apples and okra and fresh sweet potatoes. $25 bag stuff full of grub. These are the things at the Black Farmers Hub. Ooh, 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 ooh. Onions and radishes, turnips. turnips and tamarind, turmeric and garlic and ginger's on hand here. Black beans, cucumbers, zucchini and hay. Let's not forget Nature's 360 Cafe. Fresh pressed juices, we've got smoothies, acai bowls too. From herb soup, cheese, and wines made locally, it's at the Black Farmer's Hub.
Like internships were the focus junior and senior year. However, I believe that starting earlier on and also providing more paid internships earlier on can really kind of tighten up that pipeline and produce more opportunity. I would also say look into owning our own network. And what I mean by that is like when you think about the big five PWIs or well PWIs in general, they pretty much own the the NCAA.
Yeah.
Right? Where HBCUs are a lot more fragmented. And because of that, we don't really get the same visibility and the same media opportunities as our counterparts. So maybe coming together as HBCUs and building our own network, building our own propriety for us to expand our visibility. And then also, as Mackenzie stated earlier, to continue building on our research and our technology aspect, because that's what's going to continue to propel us forward and bring us that big funding that we need as an HBCU.
Mm. Thank you. Robert.
So I'm going to take it where she started as well. So, you know, I think we have to, number one, figure out how to become financially stable and grow our different endowments. But in that same note, on the athletic point, to figure out how our athletes can get some of this NIL money, that kind of thing, to attract them there. What we're seeing now as HBCUs is we're becoming the feeding ground for a lot of these PWIs. And so our athletes aren't getting in, you know, anywhere near the NIL money.
Can you expound on that, Rob? What do you mean by that?
Our athletes, they're not getting any of the NIL money, the name, image, and likeness money that these players are getting. And so prime example is this year, NCCU, we lost 41 players to the portal.
No.
A lot of them went to other schools where they were getting NIL money. Now, we signed 31 on after that. And that tells you how big the portal is. The portal has changed the game when it comes to athletics and particularly football. And so, like, you know, at Duke, you all have the guy that was promised $8 million. Well, he got $4 million because he delivered y'all the championship. But then Florida, Miami said, hey, we'll give you $10 million. You come to us. And so HBCUs, we're not going to compete with that. We can't.
Wow.
You know, our players is lucky they get a new pair of Nikes and some shorts. And so it's hard for us to recruit that, you know, against that. And so when you offer a kid that has never, you know, even in basketball, when you offer, I think we had Perry, he went to Georgia, and I think they gave him like $300,000 to come down there and play basketball, where we were just offering him a scholarship and, you know, maybe a couple free meals or something, but nothing like that. So when you take that kind of money, you put it in front of kids, what are they going to do? They're going to leave and they're going to go. And so we've figured out how to figure out where that pipeline of money is so we can attract these athletes to our schools and grow our programs. You know, athletics is huge. You can raise a whole lot of money through that. And, you know, that creates some of that financial stability. But when you're constantly bringing folks in and they're leaving within the next year, it's hard. The other side is looking at student success and career pathways, expanding scholarships. Again, back to the financial piece, career placement, I think what we hit on earlier, internships, entrepreneurship, those things that you know, make sure that our student graduates are graduating with opportunity, not just degrees. I think that's hugely important. And then, of course, the last side is innovation and technology, which we hit on earlier, modernizing infrastructure. You know, when I got a server and my role is campus safety, but I got a server that's 10 years old and it's on the last leg. We done put Band-Aids on it. We done put crutches on it. We done everything to stand it up to keep it going. You know, we've got to have modernizing our infrastructure and staying in front of that, because that campus safety piece is huge for us. That's what's going to attract students. But then also invested in the digital technology. I want AI cameras. So if you come on my camera, if you come on my campus and you start on the east side, but I'll follow you all the way over to the west side and wherever you're going after that. I want to be able to do that. You know,
yeah.
We want to do that real time crime center as campus police. And so investing in technology like that, that's important. And those are the things that's going to keep us viable in the future. You know, and honestly, I think that, I can't remember who said it, but the institution's brand, you know, my chancellor, she's all about the brand, and mm-hmm. she don't want anything to come out that, shines, a negative light. So whether we're focusing on the brand through just regular social media, athletics, or as we said earlier, storytelling on that national stage, that's what's going to give us stability and make us really thrive in the future. Focus on things like that. But like you said, you know, just going back to the other point, the NIL money, these big names that you see at Duke, these big names that you see at Carolina and all these different places,
yeah,
they're there for that NIL money. If we can figure out how to get into that pipeline, track those folks back here, folks are like, hey, I'm going to Central. I'm going to A&T. I'm going to Norfolk State, you know, because of the NIL money. But that's where we're missing out.
Wow. I'm telling you, all of you have educated me on so many different things. And that's something that, you know, someone like myself, we really didn't even think about, which I had mixed feelings about NIL anyway. I always believed there should have been a cap, but you talking about disparities and unfair advantages, man.
And you can't get mad with the kids. Like I said, when you come from
not at all.
Your quarterback from Duke, they said he and his family, they were living in their car at one point. So you put $8 million in front of him, and, you know, what is he going to do? Oh, yeah, I'll come to Duke. I'll throw every football you got, baseball, the golf ball, too. You know what I'm saying? Bean bags, cornhole. I'll do all that for $8 million. But, you know, and then he comes in and he brings, you know, Duke hadn't won an ACC championship in football since, what, 62. He comes in, boom, he gives him the championship. Now Miami's like, hey, we'll give you $10 million if you leave them. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
I know what I do. Hey, I'll tell you right now, our coach is Trey Oliver. I went to Trey and said, hey, man, I still got 4 years of eligibility. I need you some film. Give me some film, and I'll get out there, and I'm taking the NIL deal. I'm going to leave you after a year.
Oh, it's different now. It's different.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, man. It's about stability, man. It's about the university. It's about the brand. And, you know, we've got to take pride in our brand, and we got to make sure that it lasts. And but, we, you know, we also got to work, do our part. We, you know, as alumni, as employees, you know, and I said Super Legacy, I've got to do my part as Super Legacy to make sure that that brand goes on and we continue to do what we know we're doing.
Amen. Amen. Thank you, Mackenzie. We're counting on you to take us home. What you got?
Okay, before I get my answer, I want to go back to Chief Gaddy, because those are all really, really good points. Especially, I feel like all HBCUs were kind of in that same like field right now, like with NIL, infrastructure, and facilities. Because again, with the NIL, but even the resources to help keep our athletes healthy, to help keep them playing longer, like. I work with athletics in our training room. Like, our training room is not what it should be up to that standard of being a D1 program, you know? Mm. And then it comes back to the alumni. Like, we started an Aggies All-In campaign trying to get our Aggies to pour back into athletic foundation to help pay for these NIL, help pay for facilities, and help pay for scholarships to get these athletes to come to A&T. And also, like, that's what helps keeps us going. You know, they want to get back to that being run the MEAC type of title, but in the CAA now. So they want to kind of get back up to that brand, that standard of what people are used to. So, and the money of budget all plays a part. But to your question, and like three things I would tell and kind of pass down is, one, being open-minded, coming in, being willing to like open and be open and talk to people. Talk to your advisors, talk to your professors, talk to financial aid, talk to people who are going to help you make the best of your 4 years at your university, at your HBCU, you know. A closed mouth doesn't get fed. And I've always said it and I keep saying it because unfortunately, not every opportunity is going to be broadcasted out there. You know, you have to go out there and kind of look for them. Like Jessica said, the pipeline from professional development, you know, A&T has gotten better. I will say our career fair has grown. It's big. It's massive every year. But for a kinesiology student like me, it's very small. It's very limited. There aren't many opportunities for kinesiology because it's also a new and growing field. So expanding our network, expanding our pipeline, and talking to those professors that may have connections to other places that can get you an internship, that can get you in the door, can get you an interview, you know? So being open, being like receptive to try something new, you know? I guess really like the biggest one I would say, I was thinking on it, but everyone just says such good stuff, but be open, honor our legacy and our past. Yeah, that's what I got for you.
Man, that's beautiful, say, all of you. Yes, sir, yeah, Brian.
I can say one more thing. Like, I think like more than enrollment, like, you know, but retention, like, you know, emphasizing, like, you know, resources like McKenzie was saying, like, to help people with mental health and different things to help them make sure they finish, because there's so many people that start, like, you know, they start. I saw, like, my freshman year, it was so many people like on campus, and then the next semester or the next year we didn't see them, like, you know, and I don't know if they finished somewhere else, they transferred, or they just decided not to come back. And, like, you know, providing scholarships, making sure that, like, you know, people are in the right spaces that they can be in to succeed. Mm-hmm. And then with athletics, like, helping them know that, like, athletes can compete. Like, you know, if you win the MEAC, that you can go to the NCAA tournament. If you win the MEAC, like, or you get a good enough record, like, you know, in the college football, you can actually go to the Division II college football playoffs, like, you know, and compete for a championship. So let them know that they can still get a good look. Like, you know, you don't have to go to like the biggest school to be able to do that. But it does make it harder with the NIL thing too. Like, so,
man.
Hey, Zo.
Yes, sir.
I got to throw a prop out to Norfolk State. With their hiring Michael Vick, came in and he proposed a ticket sharing type revenue for athletes, where they raised the prices by 80%, but part of that will go back to NIL deals for the
students. That's a great idea.
You know, and you know, people bought in. Of course, you know, people are gonna come see Michael Vick, especially from the Tidewater area, because that's where he's from. Yeah. But doing innovative things like that's some of the things that we can do, that we need to do as universities, to be creative like that, to create those opportunities. Like NCCU, my daughter, they sell her jersey. She gets a percentage of back from that every time somebody buys a number zero NCCU jersey. Hinton's on the last name. Hint for everybody. it's on the website. But no, you know, club, right? but doing things like that. You know, like when Mike came in and said that, I was like, man, look at this. You know, he's coming in, and it just shows you that he's actually invested into the process, and that's what it takes. You know. You know, we're not going to have those 8 million. We're not going to, we can't even pay our coaches hardly. And so to think we're going to pay an athlete $8 million says a whole lot. But anyway, I think that that's just a big key to success of our athletic programs. And like Brian said, you know, letting these kids know, hey, you're going to get a spotlight on ESPN. You're going to be seen in the NCAA tournament you guys win. And so that's important too. So.
Man, all of y'all shared some great ideas. I love that idea and what Brian said. I actually like, too, Jessica was talking about all the HBCUs coming together in a network. Man, that would be phenomenal, too. So,
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. There is a channel called, it's Black News Channel. I forget what like cable networking is on, but, like, you know, it's been out since 2020. They try to show highlights of, like, you know, Black culture, what's going on in there. So
Can I say something though? They're gonna have to get a little grimy first to get that money. They gotta get Tubi-ish. You know, they gotta be a little Tubi, get some money. Then they can educate and inform us. We gotta get that money in there, man.
Not for sure.
No, I'm just playing. Yeah, I hear you.
Tubi's growing though, man. It's crazy. Like,
yeah, I mean, everybody and their mom. I can throw a rock in my neighborhood and hit someone who has a movie on Tubi right now.
That's awesome.
Hey, you guys have been wonderful. And Reagan, let's give it up for my co-host, her first time, man. Reagan.
Hey, Reagan, so she's smiling, y'all.
Probably give her the smile, the end, man. Like, more to come for Reagan, from Reagan, man. I told her she's going to be having her own podcast. She's going to be doing her thing, man. Mm-hmm. But I am forever grateful for all of you. I have to honor you. And it wasn't just about conversation. You guys brought deep, deep discussions, wisdom, authenticity. You just brought it. So I will say this. You always have a place on the Unknown Preacher LA. And, man, I can't thank you enough. More to come. And I'll see y'all when I see you.
Hey, thank you for what
you do. Thank you so much. Thank you for having us. Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Really good.
Don't forget to follow the Unknown Preacher LA podcast. We're on all podcast platforms.
It's the unknown. Unknown. It's the unknown. Unknown preacher.